Hello and welcome everybody. Welcome to the Sudanique podcast. This is the first episode of the show, and unfortunately my dear friend Mo Alshadi, he was supposed to be my co-host for the show for the entire time, but due to his work circumstances and like everybody's working from home and it's been a tough year, he couldn't make it through. But still, I'm very happy and grateful that we were able to record this episode, which we did, I think, almost 6 months ago. But still, the conversation that we had was phenomenal, and I hope you guys really like it. And I just would like to apologize for my voice. It wasn't that clear. I wasn't having the proper mic back then, and hopefully next episode will be much better and in a much higher quality. So without further ado, enjoy the show.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome, 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 one and all. Thank you for listening and joining us today. My name is Mo Alshadi. I'm going to be your host, and I'm joined today by my very, very good friend and fellow host of this podcast, actually mastermind of this podcast, Mr. Ayman An-Noor.
Hey, everybody. I'm your co-host, Ayman An-Noor.
So, I guess let's give them a quick brief. This is the
Sudanique podcast.
It's just Kataha. That's it. It's just the
Kataha Roundtable.
Yes, the Kataha Roundtable podcast. When we initially thought up the concept of this podcast, we wanted to have a medium of discussion and just topic and chit chat for third culture kids. Yeah. So when we initially thought up the concept of this podcast, the Kataha Roundtable, we really just wanted to sit down and have a forum of discussion for third culture kids.
Yeah, a forum of, exactly. That's the keywords right there.
Yep, yep. So third culture kids are, well, for those of you that are listening that may not have heard this term before, third culture kids are those of us that have grown up, lived, and spent the majority of our lives outside of our culture and outside of our countries. So the reason that we're called third culture kids is because we really don't fit in back home. We don't fit in overseas. We're the third culture. We're the ones that have fallen through the cracks, you could say. Now, having said that, third culture kid or being third culture isn't particularly related to geographic location. You could just be the odd one out, you know.
You could be
the one kid that just didn't fit in, didn't share the mentality of the people around you when you were growing up, and you were forced to define your own culture and your own character. So while our podcast will mainly focus on being a third culture kid from the Sudanese perspective, because we're both Sudanese and that's where we're from. But we do want to explore the ideas of just, you know, what it means to be third culture and beyond that, just talking about whatever's interesting and whatever's
fun. Yeah, exactly. Beautiful. That's like what interests us as third culture kids or something we experience. Like, I think like for you especially, you could say a lot of things that could be beneficial to a lot of people, Sudan or outside of Sudan.
Hey man, I mean, I first of all, that's no pressure. No pressure, you know.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it's not really about preaching. It's just about sitting down with friends and having a fireside chat. You know, that was
our main goal. Yeah, that's the goal.
We were brainstorming initially after Ayman approached me with the idea, and we were brainstorming. This is kind of where we wanted to go with it, where we wanted to take it. But let's see where it goes. You know, maybe in a couple of years, it'll just be like an hour and a half of product placements.
But promise me something, that we never sell out, okay?
Hey man, I can't promise you that. All I'm saying is if NordVPN or Raid Shadow Legends approach me, I just may have to take the deal.
Yeah, we're going to sponsor them first thing in the morning. Like, hey,
yeah,
they're sponsored by...
By Raid Shadow Legends. Use code Kataha and get a free character and 10,000 gold. Yeah. That's not a real product placement, by the way, people. Please don't try that code. Or do. Maybe it will get them to come to us faster.
By the way, we're still going to, like, I'm still calling the show right now in Spotify. It's the Sudanique podcast. But we can add Kataha and the word Haboob, because actually Haboob is a bit of international. Everybody will understand it.
Basically, yeah, Haboob is a nice one. I like that. Yeah. Was it the Americans who called one of their storms Haboob?
Because have you heard this latest crazy shit that actual Haboob coming from Africa all the way to America, and for some reason some people in the coast of America and South America are scared of this. God damn, we have crazy Kataha, man. Like,
hey, bro, it's lies, man. It's fake news. Global warming is not real. You know, it's just the climate. It's just the seasons, bro. That's all it is. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's
winter. This is winter. Winter is coming, bro. That's what's happening right now. You know.
Yeah, they better get ready, man. We're ready for winter, but I don't think they're gonna ready for our heat.
I personally am never ready for winter. I personally am never ready for winter, man. I wasn't built for that type of weather. I love it, but I wasn't built for it. Yeah. Anyway, so let's hop into some topics, then, brother. Let's hop into some topics. Do you have the list?
I was thinking about like when you said those third culture kids, and I actually saw a few Sudanese who write that on their Instagram bios and stuff.
Hey, the diaspora is alive. Yes, brother.
One of them is AKA Keys and stuff. And I was thinking that we should actually host those type of people. Because, for example, I would call myself a agriculture kid. But I did spend majority of my childhood in Sudan. Mm-hmm. But since the age of 18 and a half, I left. And I have been here ever since in Malaysia. Plus, when I was in Sudan, I would spend like 9 months in Sudan and 3 months in Saudi every single year for like 16 years in a row. So I only spent like the first 5 years in Saudi. So
let me ask you something. Sorry, man, I'm gonna hop in here a little bit, but I'm gonna ask you a question then. So did you ever feel, if you had to define yourself, if you had to, would you say at least at that point before the age of 18, right?
Okay.
Would you have thought of yourself as more Sudanese or more Saudi Arabian? And having said that, it doesn't detract from you being a third culture kid.
No.
I know you personally. You're definitely a third culture kid, you know?
Continue your question.
No, well, that's the question, right? So which did you lean towards more? Which side did you kind of gravitate towards more?
I would say like 100% Sudanese, because but even in between Sudanese people, I was a little bit of an odd one, you know.
Mm-hmm. I can relate, definitely.
Yeah, the reason is because even in Saudi, like, just to be honest, growing up, I never liked Saudis because they bullied me a little bit when I was young, so I had this thing against them, and I never like until now I never learned the Saudi accent. Because in my mind, like, this is the way I talk. And if you get me. If you don't get me, it's up to you. So whenever I go to Saudi, I never speak in a Saudi accent to make them understand. Yeah. And I mean, that's unfair of me to think of other Sudanese who do that, because I understand they grew up there all of their life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, no, this is to clarify. No, I understand what you mean, right? But for the sake of the listeners, I mean, I understand you're not throwing shade at the people who do speak in Saudi accent. Yeah, but it wasn't for you in the context of your story.
I'm coming with a point in here. So basically, because when I was in Saudi, like, I was spending most of my time playing with my best friends who used to live in. There's this hospital, it's called the King Fahad Hospital, which is like international hospital, and it had a compound, which is like a lot of condominium and villas, and the same thing you see like in a like a gated community, basically.
Okay.
And inside of that compound and gated community, and we used to live like somewhere in the mountain where people are really like old-fashioned and Bedouins and stuff everywhere. Mm-hmm. Inside this compound is like 95% or 98% expat. So
I see. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so you had a little community there of expats inside the area.
People didn't have like dress codes as the outside. Mm. We as teenagers like used to just play around and hang out with each other, like mixed group, guys and girls. Like it's just normal. Okay. You know, like we play football, basketball, whatever it is. And the kids there used to go to the international school. So that's the reason I never really got invested in the Saudi culture, because I didn't spend I didn't spend time with them that much. That makes sense.
So even living in Saudi, you spent more time with a very multicultural, multiracial community when you were there.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. You know, that actually, it makes a lot of sense as to why you would feel a little like the odd one out when you went back to Sudan then, if I'm being honest.
Because I'm used to like mix culture thing.
Exactly, right? Exactly. You got to experience all these different viewpoints at a very early age, you know? I think that's pretty cool, man. I actually didn't know that about you. I didn't know this. I've known you for what, over a decade now, close to a decade?
About
almost a decade at this point, you know? And, you know, today I learned.
I think this is the goal of the podcast. You know, we can learn more about each other and like everybody could learn stuff, and this is going to be fun.
Very true. Lots of fun, man. Lots of fun. I guess I'm supposed to give my resume now.
Yeah. Yo, good.
I like long walks on the beach. And my favorite ice cream flavor is chocolate. And
let me say something about you, right? Okay. I know you for like a decade almost, like we met in college here. Mm-hmm. But yo, like this guy over here is like a wizard. Like we do like the same shit. Like he's an IT wizard and like geek at the same
time. Not even.
Yeah, but like he's good with the guitar. He plays bass. He's crazy with the gaming development. He's crazy with the coding.
So it's funny. I never know how to react to compliments and positive feedback like this. Okay. You know, and I think it's true of most people. I mean, generally the response is very humble, right? Yeah. But the other day I was reading something that kind of really stood out, which is why I'm bringing this up now. And it kind of went along the lines of, regardless of how you feel about a compliment, you should always accept it in good faith, because refusing it or denying it or turning it down, even if you're just trying to be humble, right?
Yeah.
Is indirectly telling the person who's giving the compliment that you have bad taste or that you are bad at reading people or reading situations. So I thought that was very interesting when I was reading it, which kind of made me realign and kind of approach it very differently now, or consciously try to approach it very differently.
That's smart. So basically, you know, it says like when you like decline a compliment, you basically underestimating the other person's judgment.
Yeah, basically you're telling them like you don't know shit. You know? Like that's the basis of what you're doing.
I would say sometimes, because I think I had that problem, but like I just got real. Sometimes they say like having the compliment is, for example, it's like someone. Sorry, I have to like.
And give it a gap.
Yeah, give it a gap. We cut this shit later. Okay. So having the compliment, man, it's like sometimes it's you don't accept the compliment because something deep within your unconscious mind is disbelieving the compliment. Okay. Mm-hmm. So for example, like, let's say someone came up to you, and you see it a lot of times, especially in girls, because it's just like their nature. But you see someone who come up to you and they say like, oh, you're like, you're smart, or you're good looking, or you are talented, or you are this. You're, if you keep on like not accepting the compliment, you're kind of like taking away out of your own worth. Does that make any sense?
Makes all the sense. So I don't even think it's purely a thing that's related to women, right? Because I suffer from this.
Exactly.
For example, and a point that comes up is, I'll play a show with the band, right?
Yeah.
And we'll kill it. The whole place will be clapping, standing ovations. People will come up to me and be like, hey, man, I really enjoyed how you played. I really enjoyed how you were doing it. I've had people come up to me and be like, man, you're the greatest bassist ever, stuff like that. And on some level, I accept it with humility. And I'm always like, thank you, I really appreciate it. But on some level, I think I never really accept it. I never really internalize it. Now, it's funny that you bring this up. When I was younger, I used to tell myself, oh, no, because the moment you, it's like hubris, you know, the stories from like the Iliad and the Odyssey and al-Rawaya al-Qadima, where whenever they start thinking about themselves too highly is the moment they fall, right? So that's how I used to justify it to myself when I was younger. But as I've gotten older, I've started to realize that yeah, it does come from being self-conscious, you know, having self-doubts.
Exactly.
And I think that's the truth of most people. We all feel self-conscious. Like Kanye West said, right? We're all self-conscious. I'm just the first to admit it. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So I think this is a very interesting point that you bring up, man. It's a very interesting point. Maybe it has...
Yeah.
Yep. I'm listening.
No, continue your point.
Well, I was going to say, maybe it has something to do with the way that we're raised, with where we come from.
I mean, right? It will sound a little bit crazy, but at the end of the day, each of us are born in a different day of the time, different month, different thing.
True.
So that's why you can have the same father, the same mother, and you could have like three kids year after year, but each of them in a different month, and each of them have a different personality. One of them is introverted, one of them extroverted, one of them is shy, one of them is outgoing, one of them is smart, like whatever characteristics and traits
that they have. So yeah. I don't think that has so much to do with your month or birthday or birth hour and such. But I think there's this general assumption, at least for us in the countries where we live, right? Or where we came from, or at least the ones for the friends and the people that I know and the people in my sphere, where when you're a child, you imprint very easily, right? The way your parents treat you, even when you're a baby, like a day old, 2 days old, this is, from what I understand, what the psychology, don't quote me on it, but this is what the child psychology teaches about it, is that you imprint. And you may not remember it, but so basically all we are is we're some of the experiences that we've gone through, right? Which is why you can have twins who are completely different when it comes to their, exactly. They like completely different things. They think about things a different way, you know? So I think the imprinting is the reason for that. Like maybe, you know, what's a good example? Like the baby cried one time and mom didn't pick him up. I'm not blaming the mom. The mom is, you know, is being a mom. She has to do what she has to do, right? And it is what it is. But that imprints on the child. Stuff like that. And I think that's where all these differences come from, you know?
True.
And then it just grows as time goes along and you have more experiences and so on. Some things will grow and because I know people who are shy when they were kids and they're not so shy now. People who are more extroverted when they were younger and then they became introverts as they grew up, you know?
Also, like, it's just part of growing up. You have to go through. I read this somewhere. I forgot about it. That we all have seven lives. You know how, like, they say cats have seven lives? I'm not sure where was this mentioned, but they say even a human being have seven lives.
Okay.
Because you go through stages in your life. So, for example, from the age of 0 till 1, you're in a certain stage of mind and spirituality development, like in your conscious conscious mind. And then from like 1 to 6 or 5, you're in a certain state. And then it's, so these, and then you get like ego death at one point.
Yeah, definitely.
People say that's where you reach your highest level of spirituality or being grounded, you know, with life. When you reach that ego death. And some people can say you can reach it by 40, but you can find people who are like in their 70s and 80s who are still as bad as they were when they're 20s.
So very true.
Not everybody going to go through this stages. Some people are going to be stuck in stage one. Some people are going to go through stage three. Some people are going to go all the way. It all depends on your experience and how you, how did you make of it? Like, what did you make of this experience? True. Like, for example, I could get a car accident. We could be the two people who got a car accident at the same time. One person who would say, fuck the shit, fuck life, whatever. And he go down the line into like a,
like spiral into like substance abuse and depression. Exactly. And
exactly. And one point, the other guy will take it as a motivation and he becomes a motivational speaker, like some other guy, like whatever he can do to or be happy or like go find a partner who have the same disability as him and just
be happy. So just live his best life. Interesting. But wouldn't that also come down to shocking experiences, I think, are a bad example. Like these shock and awe type of experiences, because those make, I mean, people don't really change unless they go through trauma, you know, is what I've kind of, and I may be completely wrong here, but at least that's what I've kind of internalized through my life, is that trauma is what causes people to change completely from like 100 to, you know, 100 and you know, 0 to 100 real quick. Let's put it that way.
I'll agree with you 100%.
So I don't know, man. Maybe that's just the underlying character of the person would cause them to react to trauma in that way. May and have some merit.
I would say sometimes also the help that he can get, because some people some people would go through trauma and he would have an amazing support system around him or around her. They can make it through in a year or something and they can become okay.
That's very true.
And some people in some communities, like we can talk about this, okay, since we're talking about Sudan.
Yeah.
In Sudan, for example, not a lot of people take trauma seriously. They do, but at the same time, they don't take it as a serious sickness. And I do understand it to a certain point, because even the US 40 years ago, they didn't take
any different things. The West was a very, exactly. The West 30, 40 years ago, even their understanding of trauma was very different, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you look at the history of the studies on PTSD and things like that, you know? How they've started to study,
Like, they didn't study the soldiers who came back from Vietnam with a lot of PTSD. They didn't study them. And a lot of these soldiers, like, became serial killers or like whatever bad thing they became doing. Sometimes, I'm not saying all the time, or junkies or commit suicide.
Yeah, many of them. Yeah, there's very high. Very sad. Very, very sad.
But nowadays, thankfully, to some substance that I don't think we should mention over here, but there's certain substance that it's becoming more illegal and more legal in the US to use and to medicate on for people with PTSD. And I think
when it comes down to this particular substance that we're discussing, right? I mean, I think it makes more sense than slipping into alcoholism for somebody that's coming out of a situation like that. Just speaking personally, right? I've had people in my life, people who are very close to me, you know, who've suffered through alcoholism. And it's a very ugly thing to see somebody that you love falling apart that way. Yeah. It's a very difficult thing to see, as a matter of fact, you know. And you try to reach out to them, you try to help them out as much as possible. Obviously, you don't abandon them ever, you know, particularly if you really care about them. But it gets to a certain point where if they're not willing to help themselves, then there's only so much that you can do, I think, you know. And of course, you're there to pick up the pieces every time they fall apart. But we're only human. There's only so much that you can do. So when it comes down to coping mechanisms, which is what we're really discussing right at the moment, when it comes down to coping mechanisms, that one substance, I think, is one of the better coping mechanisms that somebody can develop, you know? So I think the world is changing. I think it's interesting for us in our lifetime, at least, because...
Witness this.
You know, yeah, to take a part, to be part of this, you know, you have to realize that whether directly or indirectly, our generation is taking over, despite the fact that the previous generation, statistically speaking, have been around for much longer than was expected, you know? Yeah. I mean, you look at the upcoming elections...
15, 20 years ago, they should have handed most of the government.
Well, should is a very strong word. Yeah. You know, should is a very strong word. But at least historically, they would have handed it over already. I mean, historically speaking. But the you know, people are living longer. People are living healthier now. Healthcare has improved drastically across the entire planet, no matter where you go. You know, we understand the way that the body works just a little bit better. And that means that our healthcare is just, is exponentially better, actually. It's a huge leap forward. I'm gonna jump topic real quick and then jump back. For example, like surgeries now. A lot of surgeries are non-invasive, you know? They're like getting a biopsy way back when, you know, years ago, would have been a very big thing where you go and you're put under anesthetic, full anesthetic, and they basically, you know, they operate and then they get the biopsy and they close it up. But now it's just this tiny pinhole thing. It goes in, it's very non-invasive, you know, they take the biopsy, you're out, and you're good in like a day or two, you know, or however long, but compared to the recovery period from something like this back in the day. So, you know, health has improved, and that's why people are living longer. And it's not a bad thing. I'm happy that they're living longer.
It's better.
Exactly, you know.
Outwish of like this type of thing that could have made our grandparents stay longer, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. I was having the exact same thought, brother. You know, like I was thinking about my grandparents, may they rest in peace, you know. But, you know, I wish they had been around for longer. So it would have been wonderful to have them be around for longer. But having said that, statistically speaking and technically speaking, like maybe not us, the 30-year-olds, the millennials, but the Gen Xers who are now like in their 40s, you know, definitely like pushing their 40s and everything. So they would have been in Congress and in the government positions, the high power government positions, historically speaking, by now, you know. Yeah. You look at something like the U.S. elections, and if you look at the people on the ballot, like Trump is 60-something, Biden is pushing 70, right? Pelosi is in her 70s, I think, 60s or 70s.
Trump is like 60.
Yeah, he's like 66, 65, 66, something around there, right? You look at most of their Congress, they're all in their 60s and 70s. They're all that generational thing. So we have to realize that the decision makers now in the world.
Trump, I'm sorry, but I wanted to say like Trump is 70. Trump is 74.
Oh, he's 74. Can you check how old Biden is real quick?
Okay, I think Biden is the same age or like few years.
I think Biden is older than him by like two or three years.
Oh, Biden, yeah, is older. Biden is 77.
77, right? Yeah, so Biden is almost 80, right? Same with Pelosi. I think Pelosi is in her late 60s, mid-60s, late 60s. Like all of these people are the previous generation. They're not our generation. They're not the current generation. They're not hip to the lingo, bro. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So these are the decision makers. You have to realize these are the people that are deciding international policy. And it's look at Malaysia. Mahathir is in his 90s, you know, his late 90s. Yeah. You know, like pushing 100. And I believe that it's similarly aligned for most places. I'm not going to say everywhere, but for most places on the planet, the people who are the decision makers are, you know, like 60 plus, 65 plus, you know? So I think that has something to do with the state of the world, personally speaking. And I'm not deriding these people. I'm not throwing shade at them, you know. But I think that maybe it's time for some new, younger blood to step in.
It's coming up. Like by the time, I think so, in the next 10 years from now, so let's say 2030, by the time 2030 till 2040, that's the time where we're going to see the effect that we want to see. You know what I'm saying? Because even the people who are like, who are born, let's say 1980 and above, okay?
Yeah, that's the millennials, man.
So we are going to take control in like 10 years from now.
I would like to think so, but you never know. And it's nice that you assume that we'll all still be alive in 2030. Yeah, it's nice to assume that the world will be here in 2030. That's very nice of you.
I guess I need to watch like the next Call of Duty, man. I need to know what's gonna happen.
Hey man. So اسمع التصوت اللي هنا إذا عارف by the way.
Okay.
Bug. Martin, so you have a good mic now. So yeah, we'll cut it out. We'll cut it out exactly. So take another gap. So yeah, we kind of went on a bit of a rant, but I guess we'll circle back around to me introducing myself then and giving a recap. Yeah, we just jumped right into it. You know,
until everybody's listening right now.
I won't go into too many details, but I'll just give a quick brief about my life. You know, so I was born and raised in the Emirates. Right. I was there until I was 15, 16 years old, give or take. Then I went to Canada. I was there for about a year plus. Then I left.
Which city in Emirates?
Oh, I was in the province of Ontario. I was in Windsor, which is right on the border with Detroit. Right. Like right across the river from Detroit City. A wonderful, wonderful place. Actually had a good time there. I mean, it wasn't the most wonderful of experiences, but it was great. It had its moments, you know. I left Canada. I went to Sudan. I was there for a while. I literally settled in for a good chunk of time, started working, you know. Then I went back to the Emirates. And then from the Emirates, I came to Malaysia and I've been settled here ever since. By the time I got here, I think it was around 2007, give or take. Around there, you know. I've been here for a good while.
Let me ask you this. What makes you a TCK?
What makes me a TCK? Okay, so I am the perfect example of what a TCK is, I believe at least. I'm gonna speak for myself here. because when I was in the Emirates, I never really fit in. You know, like you, I had a very similar experience, maybe not exactly the same, but a similar experience in the Emirates. Mm-hmm. I also grew up in a very multicultural group. You know, I was in private schools through most of it. Thankfully, my family was, well, we weren't rich, but we were okay. We were doing okay. My father had a very good job back then. May he rest in peace.
Honestly, internet.
Schools
are really awesome in the Emirates.
Well, I like to think so. I like to think so. I like to think that it had a lot to do with the type of personality that I developed later. But anyway, then when I went to Canada again, I didn't fit in. You know, I still had the maybe we can call it trauma, although it's far from trauma. But I had al-ugad is for our Arabic speakers and our Sudanese speakers of being a foreigner in a foreign land. You know, that general sense of uneasiness that at any moment, if anything were to happen, you would get kicked out and deported, basically.
You're not a citizen, man.
Okay. I'm not a citizen. As much as I like this place, it's not my place, you know, if that makes sense. So when I went back to Sudan, thankfully, and I settled there, it was wonderful. When I went back there, Sudan was actually doing okay economically, socially. It was stable. It wasn't great, but it was stable. And for the first time, I felt like I was comfortable, you know. But having said that, being in Sudan, I realized that there was a huge gap between where my fellow Sudanese brethren were and where I was, whether it was mentally, whether it was spiritually, whether it was and socially.
Especially community-wise.
Exactly. So for somebody like you that lived in Sudan for longer periods, you had a much more solid support network there. You know, you knew people. My support network was just my direct family, at least at that point. Now, thankfully, and this is funny, being in Malaysia for as long as I did, I got very, very involved and got to know a lot of very wonderful brothers and sisters from Sudan, you know, people that I consider very close family. And now they're my support network when I go back to Sudan, which is a very interesting thing to think that I developed my support network. Very ironic, right?
Outside of Sudan, exactly.
And exactly. Actually, I developed, the
same thing when they actually left Sudan, because when they used to live in Sudan, they lived in neighborhood or they lived with people mm-hmm. that fit in with. And mm-hmm. Because when we travel, wherever we go around the globe, as Sudanese, we get together. So you meet your tribe. You meet like the people you click with.
It's true. And it's true.
It's very hard to meet these type of people back in Khartoum.
I guess maybe that makes sense. Yeah. I guess that makes sense. But then here's the funny thing, though. In my trips back to Sudan since, every time I go back, and every time I'm back home, between quotes, right? Now I've started to, I mean, you know, through these wonderful people in my life, they obviously introduce me to the people that they know, and those people introduce me to the people that they know, right? Yeah. And it's funny because this kind of puts into perspective where if I had stayed in Sudan or was living in Sudan when I was younger, I probably would have gotten to know just as many people that I could bond with and be close with when I was there. Now, granted, I probably would have been a very different person because my upbringing would have been different, but I always thought it was still very interesting. يعني مثلا عندي واحد من اخواني وعن طريقه عرفت اولاد الحله اولاد الحله وتربى وعاش في الحله وانا فردت اولاد الحله بقيت من الشباب بقيت شنو ممكن هو ذاته يعني he comes to meet the guys the fellas and he'll find me already there, you know, and he would joke about it. He has a wonderful sense of humor, you know, and he would joke about it. He'd be like, what the hell, man? Like, I introduced you to these people. You didn't even call me, stuff like that. And we would make a joke out of it, a running gag and everything, you know. But it kind of put into perspective where I was able to bond with these people. But when I used to go back when I was younger, now to clarify to the listeners, I did used to go back to Sudan when I was in the Emirates. We would try to go back at least once a year or once every other year, you know, for a vacation, but it was always short periods, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months.
And I know this type of vacations because you're probably going from one house to another uncle house.
I was about to say.
You stay with your grandparents, you go to the suburb, تمشي الجزيرة, تمشي الشمالية.
Exactly. Basically, right? And it's like I didn't even get the chance to experience Sudan or experience what it would be like in Sudan for somebody of my age. You know, and, which is,
and one thing, sorry to cut you off. And one thing is, because Sudan doesn't have the same luxury of advertisement as some other cities, right?
True.
So a lot of the cool things, the cool events, the cool parties are very on the down low, not because people are scared to,
but it's ad hoc marketing. It's word of mouth marketing. It's like viral marketing before viral marketing was a thing. Exactly. Yeah, I agree. I completely agree with you. Yeah. So even then, I would go with my cousins and I would meet my cousins and I would meet my family members and everything. But, you know, there's, again, part of being a TCK, in my opinion, like for me, I would go back to Sudan and I didn't have the luxury of being very close to my family. You know, they all grew up together. They spent their childhoods together. They saw each other regularly. I would always come and I always felt like the odd man out, even amongst them, to a certain degree, you know?
That makes a lot
and it wasn't their fault. It wasn't my fault. I don't think anybody was at fault. It was just a product of the circumstance, to clarify, right?
Just a byproduct of whatever happened.
It was, just straight up, man. Just straight up, you know? It was just a byproduct of how things kind of were laid out and how they ended up being, you know? Which is sad, but thankfully I was able to bond and get closer with them as I got older. I still do a horrible job of staying in touch. I still do a horrible job of being as close to them as I should be, you know? But I like to think that there is a certain level of warmth that has developed as I've grown up and become a man in my own right. And I started interacting with them as, you know, with this new type of approach to life and this new way of looking at things, you know? Hmm. So I think... you know, that's the part of being a TCK. It's just, you don't fit in. You know, you go back, you don't fit in. You leave, you don't fit in. You go on vacation. I mean, we used to go on vacations all the time. So, like when I was younger, we used to travel. We used to go to Europe. We went to, like, I've been to, like, London, Paris, Turkey.
You did a Euro trip. My brother did, my mom.
So I did a Euro trip. This is gonna get a bit dark, but you know, for all the listeners in the chat, don't worry about it. You know, I'm very comfortable talking about this, and you know, c'est la vie, this is just how life is. Yeah. So the biggest Euro trip I did was with my dad the year before he died. The last summer before he passed away. And we did a proper Euro trip. You know what I mean? Like we went, and it was me and my dad, you know. My mom wasn't with us, which was great. It was just the boys, and we had a blast. We really, really had a blast. It was awesome. You know, one of the greater memories that I have in life. So
how many did you go to?
We went to about three countries, but we didn't stay in any one particular city in any of the countries. We hopped around. But we started off in London, because usually we had my father's sister was living in London at the time. They've moved back to Sudan now, but they were living in London. So we would always start our trips in London. Even the other trips that we took would start in London. The ones where my mom was with us and everything, they would start in London, you know? So it was great in that sense. It was always a treat to go to London, despite the fact that I hated it. it was too gray and gloomy for me, you know? And
that's what everybody's saying. People say like London is not as happy as it looks on TV.
Yeah, man, it's very dark and gloomy. Don't get me wrong. Like the people are fun, but they can be a bit cold, but they're fun, you know? But yeah, so we don't diverge, you know, too far from the initial topic. So even when I was traveling as a TCK kid, I never felt like I fit in, you know? And even going back to the Emirates where I was born, because, you know, the Emirates doesn't give you a nationality if you're born there, right?
Yeah. Same thing in Saudi, man. I was born there.
In Saudi. Yep.
My father been there for like, what, 35 years or something, and nothing.
Yep, exactly, man. So it's a jarring experience to feel like, maybe it would have been different for us if Sudan was more of a place that you would want to go back to. And I bring this up because I remember I had my Egyptian classmates and friends back then in high school. Yeah. So they were very solid in their identity of them being Egyptians, if that makes sense, you know. Fun fact, on the topic of you not speaking with a Saudi accent when you were younger. So I used to speak with an Egyptian accent when I was younger.
No way, man.
I'm serious. I'm serious.
I wouldn't be friends with you when I was younger. I was like, man, this
I know. I look back on myself and I'm not impressed with myself. I was younger. But that also comes.
I was making fun of my friends who, like, we go to the fucking picnic, and he would be like, "Ah, yeah, Ayman, يعطينا الخبز." I was like, "اسمه العيش يا مان, اسمه العيش."
اسمه العيش يا دين, ما تقول لي خبز. Exactly, man. I wasn't actually comfortable speaking in a Sudanese accent outside of the house and outside of the Sudanese circles that I was a part of until I think after I went to Canada, right? Like when I was in Canada, I made a conscious choice. I was like, this is who I am. This is the reality of where I come from. It's nothing to be embarrassed about. But a lot of that comes from coming back to the example, and this is why I bring it up, that you brought earlier about being bullied and kind of being looked down on. I think that's a commonality with a lot of the brothers in the Gulf. You know, maybe not so much now, but at least back then, I realized that was very, very true. Being Sudanese kind of meant that you were almost the butt of the joke a lot of the time, you know, just by virtue of being Sudanese, which is
because of the skin of your color. Yeah, it's because of the skin of your color. Because
I mean, it is.
I'm telling you, like, once of these, like, I'm just saying this here out loud because I don't give a fuck. Because once of these Saudis or like whatever they are, like Middle Eastern, and they see a beautiful Sudanese who's like light skin or like very fair. They start doing, they never mention any funny things, you know, they never try to. Yeah.
True. Or maybe our circumstances were a bit different, right? Maybe I'm not going to speak for everybody. I'm sure that there's probably a lot of Sudanese out there who had much better experiences in the Gulf overall, because they were able to find people that were more welcoming.
What happened to me from bullying or like, it's all like, sometimes, you know, and mostly from kids. Like we didn't get bullied from grown-ups.
Oh, no, of course, man. Like once you grow up, it gets to a certain age where people, you know, it's like, what am I fucking knocking on your teeth?
The place that I grew up on, like, is a very, In Malaysia here, they call it kampung. Right?
I see. Yeah, I see.
Al-Wilayat, it's very rural area, a lot of Bedouins. Like, the town is only like 500,000 or less than 500,000, I guess. So it's not like a big city. It's not like a big city like Jeddah or something like this. And that's the only reason. But other than that, to be honest, a lot of these Saudis are very, like, I'm not talking about people who live in big cities. I'm talking about people who live, like, in the small cities.
In the rural areas, yeah. Yep.
Very kind people. They have a lot of, like, good ethics in them.
So again, like I'm saying, I think maybe that was a product of the experiences that me and you lived through. Again, coming back, this kind of circles back around in a very nice way with the topic of, you know, your experiences shaping your character and your personality, right? So maybe just the experiences that we went through also had something to do with us feeling like TCKs, feeling more ostracized than the next man. There's a friend of ours. Amjad. Give it a gap. عشان نقطع تذكر. Amjad من Cyber.
Aye.
So this friend of ours, like, he was very comfortable. He also was raised in the Middle, in the Gulf, in the Emirates, if I'm not mistaken, actually, to be more exact, right? So he had a very different experience overall. And he speaks with an Emirati accent. Love the dude, by the way. Very wonderful person. I really should shoot him a message. But he speaks with an Emirati accent because he had a much more, I think, positive experience growing up in the Emirates. I know that a lot of his very close friends in his support circle and his support network there in the Emirates are locals, are Emiratis, right? Whereas mine are internationals, mainly.
True.
You know? Which is also something I think is worth examining and kind of worth looking at and discussing as well. You know? Because his experiences and that experiences weren't that bad. And he has nothing but good things to say about that place, you know, and that country and the people there. So maybe it's just a matter of the luck of the draw.
Yeah, exactly.
The luck of the draw. You know, like you ended up in a kampung. I, when I was younger, ended up with somewhat of a toxic crowd for a while, you know. And maybe that has a lot to do with how we may view our backgrounds. And I kind of felt the need to bring this up and clarify this because I don't want it to seem like TCKs hate the place that they come from by definition. That's not a given. TCK just means that you don't necessarily feel like you fit in.
Here's the thing.
There for whatever reason.
I'll give TCK, let's say, there are basically kids who don't have the... They are not like 100% of their country of origin culture. For example, Sudanese, 100% Sudanese, but that doesn't mean our culture. Here's my point. I know a lot of TCKs who live in Sudan, who grew up in Sudan, but I call them TCKs.
Yep.
You know, my cousin is like this crazy, amazing guy, okay? If you meet him right now, his character, like his traits right now, he will be very Sudanese to you, right? Because he's been there for a long time. But if you got to really know him, my cousin, bro, he knows all the Japanese, okay? He speaks Japanese because he used to watch Japanese from like 5 years old. So
that's very interesting, actually.
My cousin actually, he did the reverse, the opposite of what I did, right? So he was born in Sudan, all right?
Okay.
He went with his parents because his mom, my auntie's husband, used to be the ambassador in France. So they left France, came back to Sudan. They gave birth to him. My cousin is my age. They went to Saudi. And he worked at the Ministry of, what do you call it, Kharijiya?
The Kharijiya.
Going back.
No, man, let's leave that one in. That was a good one, bro. That was a good zinger. People were going to laugh out of it.
Ministry of Foreign Affairs, man. So he had a pretty good international school life, and then from there he went to Qatar, also international schools, like diplomatic school. But then when he was like 12 years old, he had to come back to Sudan. And he has been in Sudan ever since. So he spent about 8 years only outside of Sudan. He's like my age right now, let's say about 30, right? He spent 8 years between the age of 2 or four until the age of 12. Okay. And that flipped his life around. Those 8 years outside of Sudan changed his character completely. So even though he's in Sudan right now, I can tell he find it so hard to find a tribe who like the same thing he likes, who like the same jokes.
Interesting. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. So he doesn't have that same commonality, that same cultural commonality with a lot of the people that he's around.
So what I'm saying, like what we're saying right now, a lot of people are going to relate to it. Even people who are in Sudan.
And that's why I felt the need to bring it up. Yeah. Continue. Not to cut you off, brother. But yeah, I agree with you. I also felt, that's why I felt the need to clarify that one particular point, you know, that being TCK is really more about your mindset. Having said that, I actually think there's a lot of TCKs in Sudan. Like, I think Sudan is a very unique case where a lot of the people from the Gen X millennials and the Gen Z are TCK, even Gen Alpha, right? Gen Alpha are the ones that come after Z, by the way. So Gen Z are the kids of Gen X, right? And Alpha are our kids, basically, the millennials kids, right? So even the Alphas, I think, are also going to be somewhat TCK to a certain extent. I think being in Sudan, with the exception of specific circles or specific groups, forces you, at least Old Sudan, which is something that I think is worth bringing up, because Old Sudan was a very toxic community in place, not because of the people, but just because of a lot of the social hierarchy and structure that was kind of built into it, you know? And I think that a lot of the people from, you know, our chunk of generational, you know, whatever, however you want to define it, our lump of a generation, X, Y, and Z, were forced to create identities for themselves because fundamentally we just disagreed with a lot of the realities of what it meant to be Sudanese, you know? And I showed up to the party. I showed up to the party much later, as far as having to deal with the realities of what it meant to be Sudanese. But even when I was younger and I would go back there for holidays, I remember just seeing a lot of things that I didn't like, you know, overall, just things that I as a person and an individual did not agree with, you know?
Yeah, you wouldn't accept.
I couldn't accept them. And I think also that had a somewhat of a part for me personally, finding it difficult to identify as Sudanese when I was younger, you know, being able to accept that as a reality of who I am, because I would look at it and I'd go, I don't want to be like that. Of course, you know, child brain, child view of the world, overly simplistic. I couldn't understand that this was not a representation of everything. It was just a small...
Can we take a break? I'll come back. Where, Shisha?
Asma, like, can you guys give it like 20 minutes and then we'll wrap up?
Okay. All right. Yeah. Cool.
I think it's enough for the first episode anyway. All right.
That's nice.
After the edits. And within, we started at like 6:30. It's almost 7:30 now. So it should be all right. So where was I? So I think that has a lot to do with the reality of why, you know, because you see this stuff and you're like, and I just couldn't understand. Okay, hold on. And I just couldn't understand that this was a small segment of what it meant to be from there. It wasn't a representation of everything, you know? Because I was only there for like, what, 2 months, 3 months, like we were saying earlier?
Yeah.
So I think maybe that's the core of it, you know?
Exactly.
I think that's the core of it. But yeah, man. Yeah. So that's, I guess that's my brief, which kind of dragged on overly long.
Yeah. No, man, that's a sweet ass brief, man. People gotta know you, man. People gotta know who you are.
I guess they gotta know both of us, man. They gotta know both of us, you know. But yeah. So I think that best describes how we understand and how we feel or how we view.
What we should do? We should like let everybody who's listening to this, if you are a TCK or are you feeling, you feel any type of relate to what you're saying, that email us.
Please do.
Reach out to us. We're gonna put our description and just tell us how you feel, especially if you're
Sudanese. We really. Hey, even if you're not Sudanese and you just want to share your own experience in TCK, we would love to hear from you. You know, it'll be a wonderful thing. Having said that, so this is the first episode, and I guess we kind of spent it just discussing, you know, where we're coming from and how we want to approach this. But just to clarify, this is not what every episode will be about. We will be discussing all kinds of things. We plan to, you know, spotlight various artists, have music review parties, have you know, reviews of different things, talk about current events, just basically, like I said earlier on, just fireside chit chats and conversations about things that are topical and coming from the point of view of the diaspora, whether it's Sudanese or Egyptian or Saudi, or, you know, if you feel like maybe the society that you're in doesn't speak for you, we will do our best. We will do our darndest best, our damn best, to try and give your voice merit and to maybe not speak on your behalf, but to at least maybe elevate the topics that you are not able to discuss, I suppose, is one way of putting it. Yeah, yeah.
I like that.
So I think that kind of is a good place to wrap it up, maybe.
Yeah. You know? No, it's possibly. Pretty good episode. Yep. Pretty good recording.
Yep.
See you next time.
Yep. Definitely. See you next time.
So that was the end of the episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Don't forget to follow me and send me messages. Tell me what you think of the show. And if you have anything to let me know about TCK or the Sudanique or anything that you might find interesting, catch me on Instagram. I will be happy to reply to you. See you guys soon.